Hello, everyone. I'm Brian Zimmerman with Becker's Healthcare. Thank you for tuning into the Becker's Healthcare podcast series. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by our guest as we discuss cost containment and purchase services. Before we begin, I'm pleased to introduce Chris Gormley, CEO, Conductiv. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me.
So let's dive right in here. First question I've got for you today is the revenues and operating margins for many healthcare providers have been, of course, negatively affected by COVID. You know, there's been the cancellation of elective surgeries and sort of higher expenses involved in all this. What can purchase services cost management do to make up for these impacts?
Brian, thanks for the question. Before we begin, let me define what purchase services are, because there's a lot of different definitions of that cost category. And then I'll get into how it can help systems address some of the issues both before and after COVID. So first of all, purchase services are anything that is an expenditure by a healthcare system that isn't for direct labor and isn't for something with a part number, if you will. So that includes anything that's a third-party contracted service. And to give you some examples of those, we tend to view those as grouped into stakeholder or end-user groups. So one that a lot of people are familiar with are facilities. These could include things like mowing a lawn or moving snow or parking or HVAC or those kinds of things, all the structural elements needed to keep a hospital system running. But some that aren't so obvious are things like IT, much bigger area of expenditures in most health systems today, could also include things like insurance or marketing or some of those other areas that many times people don't really think about, but consume a lot of expenditures in a healthcare system. So just to give you some statistics, purchase services represent, in our estimation, about 12 to 18% of the over $1 trillion of operating expenditures in healthcare systems today in the United States. So just to use a rough average of 15%, that'll give you an idea of how much money is at stake here. And this area has not been focused on like goods, like direct labor by management teams of healthcare systems. So why is this important? Well, today, most systems are facing unprecedented times and it comes to their operating expenditures and revenues. So just to give you some examples, elective surgeries provide substantial amount of revenues. And with COVID, many elective surgeries were canceled. So this means that those revenues went down at the same time when expenditures went up. And those expenditures are both in goods and in labor. So finding, for instance, extra nurses, finding different materials that can cleanse a healthcare system. All those expenditures went up when revenues were going down. So that created a large hole for healthcare systems. And even before that, many systems are facing what's called operating under Medicare reimbursement. And that's because our population is getting older. And when people turn 65, they go on Medicare. Medicare pays less for a cost dollar than private payers do. So therefore, these healthcare systems now have less money coming in for a similar level of cost. So therefore, there's a need to improve the, on average, 3% operating margins that exist in healthcare today, while all these different elements are hitting systems today. And we view purchase services as an untapped opportunity for healthcare systems to find the money they need to plug the holes that I just described.
Great. I mean, thank you for laying all that out and sort of setting the stage there with, you know, sort of going over that definition of purchase services. I think a lot of that, the mowing the lawn or moving the snow, stuff like that, you wouldn't think about. Then you go to the bigger stuff like, you know, insurance and IT. But, you know, we're really managing costs here. What results are possible? You know, do you have any examples you can share with listeners on perhaps some positive results you've seen occur for health systems here?
Oh, yes, of course. Well, is it worth the effort is really the question. And let me just describe the major areas of improvement that you can see, and I'll give you some exact examples. So the first one, of course, is by creating a greater focus on cost management, one can rein in and centralize some of the cost practices that exist. So instead of individual users contracting with whatever vendor or supplier they wish, you gain some common practice and some visibility into this, which improves the overall price that you can get. But it's also the quality. So when we think about the kinds of contracting that occurs, it's ensuring that suppliers are delivering against the quality that they ensure. And a lot of people don't really realize that the quality of care can be very much determined by third-party providers. So that goes from things like ambulance services to dialysis services to the things that affect patient care. So it's very important to understand and measure that quality. And then when we think about utilization, that's another one. So are you using too much of a service or the provision? So that could include after hour services that aren't necessary, or could include things like throwing in a radiological item in a municipal waste bag, which costs more. Those are items that are oftentimes aren't seen, and that's improvement in the actual utilization itself. And so the other one is just consolidating suppliers. So when you might have 10 suppliers doing the same thing throughout your network, consolidating it to, you know, two or three. And another major improvement that we've seen is diversity suppliers. So in these times of ours, when not only local vendors, but diverse vendors and suppliers are in need of the kind of focus that they're due, the healthcare systems today can provide a very great lift, because in some cases, healthcare systems are the major employer in a region, and therefore they can reach out and contract with suppliers that improve their particular businesses substantially. So let me give you some examples. So if we look at individual categories, we typically see weighted average about 20% savings across most of the categories we deal with. So if you're looking at things like pest control, 24%, laundry and linens, 22%, vending services, 27%, as an example, audiology services, 20%. So when you take those together, there's some systems here that I have in front of me. A New York-based nonprofit spending $67 million and saving 28% on that amount of spend. A central U.S. Catholic healthcare service looking at about $200 million of spend, saving $43 million, 22%. And I can look at many other examples like that. And those are examples of what you can impact. And so when you think about that rippling through, how many nurses is that worth that you can retain? How many suppliers can one employ locally or support in a diverse environment? Those are the kinds of things that focusing on purchase services can do. If you think about a return on investment, we've also got some statistics there. So that generally ranges from 10 to 1 or better when you think about the kind of ROI that comes from doing this kind of work by employing different people within your organization and focusing on the spend itself. And there's many other advantages, including speed, including the ability to impact the delivery of various services, like I mentioned earlier, like IT, clinical services and managed print services, or administrative services in the organizations that exist. So we have many other case examples, but many times it's case specific, looking at your system and what kind of impact can be made. So those are just some examples that I could provide.
Yeah, no, those are great. And I think that the 20% average savings across most of those categories, that's really significant. And I think also, even like the ROI you mentioned, 10 to 1 as an average, like these are really significant numbers. So I guess it sort of begs the question, why haven't more healthcare systems maybe embraced purchase services cost management today?
Well, one of the things that we see is that, like I said earlier, some of it has to do with the history. And so if you think about the journey that many systems have taken, they focused on direct labor, including nurses and doctors, of course, for many years. The next wave was focusing on goods or part number items, including pharmaceuticals, medical surgical type items, consumables. But when it comes to services, because they are diverse, so in other words, the decisions for making purchasing decisions are made by the end user. So if I'm in marketing, I'm going to choose my PR agency and my local print agency to support me. If I'm in facilities, I'm going to go pick my elevator repair or my lawn care or my valet parking people. If I'm in clinical, I'm going to pick my blood provider. And so there's not been the kind of focus that has been for those other categories. Now, that has ripple effects. Number one, biggest one is data visibility. So if all that data is disparate throughout the organization, it's hard to understand what's going on so one can optimize against it. So missing data is probably the biggest barrier that we've seen. The other one is just figuring out how you govern all this. So who's making the decisions and how do you do it in a way that allows for the local needs of the stakeholders while optimizing for the overall system? So how do you have a system this while at the same time not making it so centralized that end users don't get what they need? So that's a fine balance. And there's definitely ways of doing that. And I would highlight for a lot of our listeners that that's been done in value analysis when it comes to implantable devices, for example, and different pharmaceuticals. So if you think about it, how do we do value analysis for business services? So how do you have a relationship with the IT department so that you can make those decisions? How do you have a relationship with the facilities department? How do you have a relationship with the administrative team to challenge perhaps what the benefit program is going to be or the legal use case that we're going to have? So you have to think of it as a governance element. And the next one is a lot of people treat services like goods, but they're very different. And I guess the best example I can think of is like, when you think about a service that's provided in your daily life, it's many times it's hard to specify. So if I was to say to you, you know, how much does it cost to mow a lawn? Well, the first question you ask is, well, how big is the lawn? And how frequently? And there's a bunch of other questions that come in, unlike buying, let's say, a syringe of a certain specification. So generally speaking, it's much harder to compare one service to the next. So therefore, benchmarking and cost estimation is very difficult. But there's ways of handling that as well, almost like thinking of it like a house appraisal. If you were to ask, what is a house worth? Well, you have to compare it to other houses in the region, and you have to make an apple-to-apple, you know, reset. And that's another method that you can use with purchase services. And the next one, of course, is handling all the different skills required to know how to source the many categories. So there's over 615 individual categories in purchase services that we track. So therefore, most organizations don't have the skills to know, okay, I'm going to go to my IT department as supply chain, and I'm going to help them source cloud services or the next Microsoft licensing contract. That takes a lot of domain knowledge in order to help them. And even in the IT department, on the flip side, how do you source that in a way that puts you at an advantage with the suppliers themselves? So that's another area of improvement that has to occur. So those are the major areas that we've seen require data visibility, governance, having a clear leader, and of course, having that kind of domain knowledge on demand to be relevant against both suppliers and with suppliers, and also with stakeholders internally.
Thank you so much, Chris. I really appreciate you sort of, you know, laying out those challenges in such a direct way. And then I just have one final question for you. So what can health systems do sort of immediately and maybe in the longer term as well to establish a purchase services cost management program? How can they get going here?
Well, it may sound daunting, and it's really not in the short term or even in the long term. It's like anything, you've got to start, and sometimes the start keeps people from actually achieving these objectives. But the first thing to do is to understand your spend. So what I mean by that is purchase services tends to be an area that you can use your accounts payable files. You can use contract expiration files from major contract systems to understand when you have expirations occurring, how much are they worth, and to basically set up a approach to gain some quick wins. So what we'd like to advise folks to do is understand what you're spending. Let's identify some low-hanging fruit, to use that expression, to gain political buy-in and also to gain some wins that demonstrate the potential. And that could be done internally or with a third party. And the skill sets that then are brought in, once you get some of those quick wins, what we like to then say is that you've got to look at assigning a leader, because like anything, unless somebody is a single point of accountability, many times organizations can't make these changes. So what we like to look at is somebody that's got enough organizational gravitas, to use that expression, to bridge to stakeholders to know about purchase services. And I'd also encourage healthcare systems to perhaps look outside of healthcare to other industries that have been doing this services or indirect service management for many years for talent. That's another area to think about. And once you have a leader, looking at the longer range, putting in a solid governance process. So I know we have a lot of CFOs and chief administrative officers, as well as heads of supply chain. All three of those are typically involved in a longer range program. And the reason why is that a CFO and a chief administrative officer, they've got a lot more organizational scope and reach. So how do you get the stakeholders to participate with supply chain? You've got to have an executive that's got that kind of reach. Supply chain is necessary because, of course, they're the ones who are experts in how to contract and negotiate and are at the center of a lot of these different areas. And so if you can create a group, a committee, a governance model with all three of those, you really got something, and you'll be able to make this work very effectively with a leader. And, you know, obviously, once you've got all that in place, you can grow. And let me give you just a case example of this. We have a system in Colorado that we work with. It's really a great case example. They started with literally nobody in their department, and they brought on board a really dynamic woman leader. And she was able to identify the spend, to get the quick wins, and then move forward. And just as one example, she got so much traction just in IT, the IT leader hired a person to put in her department to help drive cost savings for IT over the time frame. And so that's just a vote of confidence that you start to see stakeholders who say, listen, my job is to apply IT services to my organization, but the less I spend on it, the more I can do, and the higher the quality of the deliverable, the better I look as an IT leader or as a facilities leader, and you create those partnerships with supply chain. And again, just to kind of bring it forward, that's addressing that 15% of the costs that exist, OPEX. And if you can get the neighborhood of the 20% savings or thereabouts, we view this as about $39 billion of wasted spend that exists within healthcare that can drop to the bottom line to address, of course, those deficits in revenue and the increasing costs that exist, not only because of COVID, but because of that whole Medicare, Medicaid challenges that I mentioned earlier. So this is an area that we believe that if you're an organization that's looking for areas that many times are less politically sensitive than having to reduce the staff of your direct clinical support staff or reducing their wages, this is an area that can not only benefit your bottom line, but also benefit your communities. Again, as I said earlier, because of local sourcing and diverse sourcing, and that's an area that benefits the health of the communities around healthcare systems, as well as their own bottom line.
Definitely, Chris, I appreciate you sharing that specific example and sort of laying out the process there, right? You build some momentum with some quick wins, identify a leader, and then really get that solid governance program in place, and then focus on growth. Chris, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing all those insights with our listeners today.
Brian, thank you for your questions and your comments, and I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. I also want to thank our podcast sponsor, Conductiv. You can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com/podcasts.